Blog Talk Radio.
Jacksonville. A child was born who could sit still. 86 years later with no regret. You know that man can't sit still yet. The Great Depression couldn't get him down. Worked for his dad's store in town, collecting money in small amounts for whites and blacks in a furniture account. That's Kennedy. Wants us all to be free. That's Kennedy. Wants us all to be free. As he'd collect, he'd talk to folks. He'd hear legends, tales, songs, and jokes. Now this fine treasure he'd record and write. He was colorblind. See black and white. Writer's project for the WPA. Zora Neale Hurston, he earned his pay. The crackers black, they talked for hours. It was a barefoot history in this land of flowers.
This is The Week That Was from WBRN Radio and on the Boston Red Network. Hey, Boston Red here from the Jerry Pippen Broadcast Booth. We had an exciting week to recap and bring up to date some recent addendums to a week. Wheeler, the acting attorney general, was on Capitol Hill, drilled by members of the Democratic Party, and he virtually said nothing other than Mr. Mueller would continue his investigation, and he would decide when to end the investigation. Basically it, and he avoided many of the questions from the committee. So, in effect, it was a non-news event, and it didn't get very much news because of the various machinations, flummery, and what have you in Virginia, and we'll get to that. End of the minute. There was a State of Union. Uncle Carl Rove is here via the Wall Street Journal. Uncle Carl obviously is not live. And his article about what happened on Tuesday at the Capitol. DJ Trump, of course, was in the dock delivering his message. And we'll get to that one also. There was the passing of two legends, one from the sports world, Frank Robinson. He was 83 years old. He had got VIP Most Valuable Player in both the National and American League. He managed various teams, was a player manager in Cincinnati in the 70s. He went on to manage Montreal. And a stop in Washington with the Nationals. He had been a man in many, many, many teams there. And there was an excellent article. We went over it from the Los Angeles Times. And then there was the Dean of the Senate, representative, the former representative, Dingell, John Dingell of Michigan. He served 59 years in the House of Representatives. And not only that, he was started as a page. His father represented the district also as John Dingell Jr. is his name. And we'll read some of his remarks before we finish here that he left dictated via his wife, Debbie Dingell, who now has a seat. His last words to the American people. He was no doubt a hero person in the sense of the historian Arthur Toynbee. he would have said a hero man. This is what we based the same designation on, the All-American hero O.J. Simpson, who spoke on the Sauger FBI raid surrounding Stone, the associate of D.J. Trump, and his friendship with D.J. Trump at one time, D.J. Trump the citizen. And O.J. made it very, very clear he knew D.J. Trump. He was a funny fellow. And he did not know D.J. Trump the president, and he did not venture into politics. A very wise move on OJ's part, because right now it's a minefield with obviously no clear demarcations. It's a changing field. The landscape is changing. We have a polarized situation that particularly the right wing has determined what their agenda is, and that's the same agenda they've had since 1968, the Southern Strategy by Tricky Dick, known as Richard Nixon. But Nixon was no Reagan, as he said clearly on the morning after the election via the program Good Morning America. He was a conservative, he was a former president at the time, and he was not a nut, referring to Reagan. He's no doubt rolling over in his grave now with this new nutty gang that's taken over. But this happens when you have a system, and you have to look at D.J. Trump. It is not D.J. Trump, but American capitalism on display. They have benefited from D.J. Trump and the general confusion surrounding the electorate in the U.S., a right-of-center electorate, and we'll get to some of that in the minute here, explaining exactly what has occurred. And you see it also in Virginia, the overlapping cultural aspects there from the era of Robert E. Lee. In fact, Mr. Fairfax, Lieutenant Governor Fairfax, presided over a legislative session where they were commemorating Robert E. Lee. And, of course, he protested it. Now there are calls for his resignation, based upon allegations. A second woman came forward, as in many of these cases. Her case dated back to when he was at university in Duke, at the Duke University. And that would be, what, 19 years old? Incident, the oven was in 2004. It's interesting about these events when they come forward and the event has already occurred, so obviously the statutes would be out. It was a one-on-one situation, but there are other women that said that they had heard about it. What's very interesting about this particular incident, Fairfax was a federal prosecutor. And, of course, being a federal prosecutor, you would assume, and it did happen, the FBI checked him out. And we wonder why none of these women came forward, are not only the women, but the people that had secondary knowledge of this, you know, the incidents, plural, came forward. And now at this date that he is being elevated up. And a number of Virginia officials have called, the senators Warner and Kane have called for his resignation, also the resignation of the governor, and the attorney general is involved in his own situation. So there are three different offices there, and the governor has just announced, we'll get to it in a minute, but he's riding out the storm. I would take it this, Mike, is the longer he rides out the storm, the allegations against him obviously have been out there. They've been out there over a week now. This is the second week there, and then the third week, and so forth and so on. It'd be much more difficult to get him out of there. Now, as what happens with Fairfax, if they have an investigation, they will investigate this, and then his situation will occur. We briefly looked at the Virginia transition law and how it could go. Fairfax, if Northam did leave, Fairfax would become the governor, and the only question is, could he appoint then a lieutenant governor? And the lieutenant governor could take office And depending on how the investigation turned out, this is with Fairfax, if it did not turn out in his favor, Fairfax could then resign. The lieutenant governor that was appointed would become governor. That's a long line of cards here, but instead of cards falling like dominoes, they would be rising like chess pieces. Anyway, let's go to Uncle Carl here. And he is writing in the Wall Street Journal as normally on the 7th of February. Democrats, 10 dreadful days. Tuesday was a miserable night for congressional Democrats. Most looked as if they would rather be anywhere other than in the House chamber. Listening to the State of the Union, the Speaker, Nancy Pelosi, thumbed frantically through her copy of the president's speech, and as that would hurry him along, presidential hopeless Kamala Harris paused her lips and shook her head as Trump delivered his comments. When the president herded on and imagination and on immigration, I guess it is imagination, and custom enforcement agents to work against sex trafficking, and Republicans stood to cheer. The socialists, as he called it, AOC, that is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, reluctantly got up but did not applaud. Kirsten Gillibrand, who had championed the Me Too movement, wouldn't even stand, which she didn't want to, as they say, exhort the energy. Trump warned of caravans of illegal aliens, and some Democrats booed and jeered. The State of the Union did serve one purpose for the Democrats. It diverted attention from 10 dreadful days that the party had suffered, days that revealed serious problems, according to them. It began, as he said, on Sunday the 27th, when a former Starbucks CEO, Howard Schwartz, said he would run for president as an independent. Democrats' reaction was swift and ugly. He couldn't win. He couldn't help. He could help re-elect D.J. Trump. A top Clinton advisor called Schwartz a jackass, while President Obama's former campaign manager said the coffee magnate would ruin the world. As liberals avowed on Monday to boycott Starbucks, Ms. Harris advocated eliminating private health care insurance, saying, let's move on. At least she didn't pretend as if she liked your plan. You could keep it, but in a maybe $180 million with private insurance, will not readily surrender that health care decision to, as Uncle Carl calls it, Washington bureaucrats. The next day, the Virginia House of Delegates considered a bill allowing abortion to move up the moment of natural birth, despite its inhuman and widespread popular opposition to late-term abortions. On Wednesday, the governor there, Northam, made it worse, declaring that a woman wanted an abortion while in labor. The infant would be delivered and kept comfort while the physician and a mother decided whether to kill it or not. This is known as infanticide. Anyway, the following day, the House Intelligence Committee revealed that around the time of the June 2016 Trump Tower meeting between D.J. Jr. and a Russian lawyer who supposedly had dirt on Hillary Clinton, Jr. spoke with friends unconnected to the campaign, not his father. That would crush Newhouse Intelligence Committee Chair at Chef, who claimed the president's son lied about not calling his dad. Chef still hasn't retracted this accusation. On Friday, Northam's 1986 medical school yearbook surfaced, showing a picture of a man in a KKK costume, another in blackface. The governor apologized, but claimed he wasn't either a man pictured before admitting that he donned blackface for a Michael Jackson dance competition. Then on Saturday, in Montana, Governor Steve Bullock wrote he was wrong and naive not to have alerted others to sexual harassment allegations against a former aide he fired, who was later hired by New York Mayor Bill de Blasio and dismissed for similar behavior. On this Sunday program, Democratic leaders rinsed their hands over how the Virginia scandal would affect efforts to depict the president as a bigot. But even after three gubernatorial news conferences and a dozen calls for his resignation, Northam remains the governor. And on Monday, the man who would replace Northam if he resigned, the lieutenant governor Fairfax, acknowledged he had a sexual encounter in 2014 at the Democratic National Convention. That was in Boston. The woman in question alleges Fairfax sexually assaulted her. And she is had the same law firm that Christine Blasey Ford. On the Brett Kavanaugh situation, meanwhile, the anti-Trump needs to impeach a campaign began airing commercials attacking Representative Richard Neal, Ways and Means Committee Chairman, for only a month for moving too slow. This and then it was revealed that Elizabeth Warren had written on a Texas bar application she was an American Indian. She previously claimed that others had identified her as a Native American, but that she hadn't done so herself. Well, the card's out there, she's out there, and on we go. Now let's head back here. And we'll start with the latest. This is a Virginia pilot here on Northam breaks silence with hints he's still determined to stay in office. He's meeting with the head of the African Farmers Association in his office here, John Boyd. It's almost a week since Virginians have heard from their governor about his possible resignation over a racist Facebook picture in a blackface costume from 35 years ago. But on Friday, Northam finally made a reference to the issue that put the Commonwealth in the national spotlight by tweeting about a meeting with the leader of the National Black Farmers Association and emailing state workers to signal his intent to stay on his job. I've just concluded a great meeting with Virginia's Rev. Northam as Association President Boyd retweeted, along with a photo of him and the Democratic governor speaking on opposite couches. I pledged my support and urged him not to step down. A few hours later, the governor retreated Boyd's addressing him directly. John, I enjoy hearing from you today. Thank you for your great work on behalf of black farmers, he said. Later in the afternoon, Northam emailed all state workers with an apology for distraction throughout the week. Our Commonwealth is in uncharted waters, and many of us are undoubtedly left confused and uncertain about what the future holds. He wrote, I want to assure you that the business of the Commonwealth and our duties as public servants will continue. You have placed your trust in me to lead Virginia forward, and I plan to do so, he wrote. The tweet exchanges and emails follow the week of turmoil in the Virginia's top leaders. the Attorney General also herring for dressing in a blackface, and of course Justin Fairfax, the fourth generation farmer. We prayed in this meeting, told a reporter over the phone Friday. To give you a sense of what the meeting was like, the fourth generation farmer who founded the organization in the 80s, Boyd has been involved in politics and civil rights for decades, starting with a fight against racial discrimination within the Department of Agriculture in the 90s. He said the governor's office contacted him this week for a meeting. Well, he needed a meeting. It's compared to the summit that DJ Trump plans to have in Hanoi with Chairman of the Democratic Republic of Korea. He will dominate. That'll be the last of February. Of course, February is a short month. It's African History Month. Since reeling from the effects of President Trump's trade war with China, aren't getting their federal supplement support checks. Boyd said he and Northam spoke candidly on Friday about the issues that have caused the governor to go into hiding, with Boyd advising the governor to continue to reach out to leaders and asking for redemption. I believe the governor should be given a second chance, Boyd said. Boyd's position is in stark contrast to nearly every other prominent politician in Virginia, most of whom called for Northam to step down after the photo appeared. This is from the Eastern Virginia Medical School, 1984, on February the 1st. Northam admitted he was in the photo. Then he backtracked, saying the next day in a national TV news conference that he was confident he was not in the photo. So he was in it, not in it as well. So what? The governor made no appearances since February the 2nd, with calls for him going unanswered as reporters and camera crews stalk the executive mansion all week. They can just go someplace and go to sleep. He tweeted on Friday he immediately met with hundreds of responses, most of them calling for him to resign. Resign, reclaim your dignity through resignation or reparations, one tweet said. Boyd said he hadn't spoken to Herring or Fairfax, who was accused of by a second woman. That's from the Virginia Pilot. Let me skip around here a little bit. The summit we already talked about, that will take place in Hanoi on the 27th and 28th of February. The Koreans, meanwhile, have been pushing for Hanoi, the bustling capital that could afford Kim an opportunity to hold a separate bilateral meeting with the leadership in Vietnam. In a second tweet, Trump predicted that North Korea will become a different kind of rocket, an economic rocket. No doubt about that. In the beginning of manufacturing in Korea, this is on the south part, there was enormous sacrifice by Korean people. They literally worked, as LBJ would say, like dogs, and very long shifts, etc., because so-called South Korea was designated by the industrial capitalist countries to be a manufacturing center under the president Park Chung-hee, who was later assassinated. But nonetheless, he built the industrial Korea, and he was a patron of many of the larger Samsung and other industry, that's in Japan, and many of the other large industrial giants who were coming into their own through procedures. And what had happened there was Western manufacturing technology was transferred to the Republic of Korea, and of course they modified it and turned it into a marketing phenomenon. Now, as other things happened, that China, of course, at the time was primarily a peasant nation, there, but now China is a giant, is an economic giant, a manufacturing giant. And interesting, some of the manufacturing in Korean Republic moved on to China because it's cheaper there, and now that's moved to Vietnam. No doubt that evolution reflow will flow to the Democratic Republic of Korea as soon as they set up the factories are there. And of course Trump has his mind on the nice white sandy beaches in the Democratic Republic. So there's much room for development there. They have an educated workforce. That's the key. You have to have a workforce that is capable of handling a new technology, and they do in fact have that, and they have health care. So those are some key things there. And this go forward, we commend DJ Trump for moving forward here. What this has done basically is, while we're here, has put a hole in Wilsonian foreign policy, which is a racist foreign policy, a policy formatted by the very primitive capitalists at the time. And in conjunction with colonial powers, which still have their grip in places like South Africa, in Kenya, their footprint is there, and the French, so-called French colonies, the big foot is on them, because they're in an economic arrangement where they literally send money, their tax money, back to Mother France, or Father France, and then it's distributed back to them. So this is some things that will come out of this as things change over, and they need to change over. Let me get you got another thing here on Wilsonian foreign policy. Now, this is the new reality. McCarthy, he's the Democratic, the Republican leader, presses Democrats to rebuff two Muslim lawmakers over what he called alleged anti-Semitism by Robert Koster in the Washington Post. Republicans are focusing their ire on two Muslim women in Congress, accusing them of anti-Semitism and pressing Democratic leaders to rebuff them. They are Representative Omar of Minnesota and Rashida Tlaib of Michigan. This is part of a larger Republican effort to drive a wedge into traditional nonpartisan relationship between the U.S. and the Israeli Zionist state. Republicans are casting themselves as the most resolute defender of Israel, highlighting the party's appeal to traditionally democratic Jewish voters. The Democratic Party renewed internal debate over Israel is certain to have repercussion in 2020, no doubt about it. As many hopeful talents in Trump, whose unwavering support for Israel recognition of Jerusalem, and this is an as a capital and not Tel Aviv, this is an opportunistic moment. And dozens of liberal Democrats have criticized Israeli government policy, which they should, including Omar and Tabili, and endorsed the boycott, divestment, and sanction movement of BDS to apply economic pressure on Israel to change its policies towards the Palestinian conflict. The unfortunate problem is many of these Zionists do not even recognize the Palestinians as a people, literally. This is nothing more than Holocaust politics, period. The minority leader McCarthy, he's in the House, told reporters on Friday that Democratic leaders led by Nancy Pelosi should admonish Omar and Tlaib, and suggested that the situation was worse than the firestorm over the racist King of Iowa. King, over the years, has repeatedly targeted immigrants and minorities. Last year, and of course, he met with far-right Australian parties, with historic Nazi ties. Now, wait a minute now. One GOP option is to seek a vote on a resolution, excuse me, by Lee Zandig from New York, rejecting anti-Israel and anti-Semitic, excuse me, hate in the U.S. and around the world. The resolution mentions Omar and Tlaib, along with the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. This is everybody. The leaders of the Women's March, as well as they threw in the neo-Nazi rally in Charlottesville last year, and a mass shooting at a Pittsburgh synagogue. They didn't throw in what happened at Margie Stolen Stone High School in Florida. And this goes on. What Representative Omar tweeted that Israel had hyphenized the word and referred to the evil doings of Israel under the pressure of last month. She disavowed the anti-Semitic tripe I knowingly used what is unfortunate offensive, but stood by criticism of the Zionist policy. We came on the fire last month after Daily Caller. Daily Caller is a right-wing neo-Nazi newspaper. Identified her support, a supporter of hers, Abdu Quadella, as having posted anti-Semitic conspiracy theories. Ralph Reed, a notorious right-winger, he's now head of something he calls the Faith and Freedom Coalition. He's been around and an ally of DJ Trump's, and Republicans are working to change the center of gravity in the American electorate on the issue of Israel. Well, the situation here, the Democratic Party, historically since Harry S. Truman, when he recognized the Zionist state, that was unfortunately a big mistake, he has had continued to be the cheerleaders for the Zionist state. The Republicans in coalition with some right-wing Jewish elements in the U.S. And, of course, right-wing parties in the Zionist state have come together with Bibi Netanyahu and the rest of these characters. They're in Brazil with the right-wing president there. So, effectively, what has happened is the Israeli politics have moved far to the right, that they now find themselves more and more coalescing with these ultra-right neo-Nazi parties. So there's really no difference there. The Zionist movement, or the international movement, now is a movement with these right-wingers like the one that took over in Brazil, that is destroying the forests, trying to destroy the indigenous peoples there. So this is the kind of front they have put out there. So from a democratic standpoint, a human rights standpoint, Representative Omar and Tabele have the right to assert the situation. And then they also talk about the future Prime Minister of the UK, Jeremy Corbyn. Well, Jeremy Corbyn is correct. And the problem is, I've had this argument with these Zionists that really don't know the history. They don't know the history of a British Prime Minister named Balfour, who the agreement to establish the Zionist state was named literally after. But what happens there in the now? Now, this struggle with the Zionists and within the Democratic Party is not going to be an easy struggle. Kamala Harris comes to mind there. She's standing there grinning with Bibi Netanyahu. So these Democratic candidates, most of them, Bernie Sanders took a principal position on Zionism, also on Venezuela. We didn't mention Venezuela here, but Venezuela, the Zionists, are not only they have troops in Brazil, supposedly trying to put out a fire. Well, or no, excuse me, it was because of the earthquake there. But they are in Colombia, they are all over the place. In fact, there are some Israeli firms that want to build the wall. So all these connections are here and side connections are there. One thing this does is it starts to highlight to the American people through people like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez the real situation, as the American people say it, to paraphrase the late great Jerry Pippin in the Affordable Care Act, they will like this work more and more, and that is what they are really afraid of. These people will have their day, and they are having their day now, this right wing, but they will not be here always. I predict in 20 years it will be a totally different situation, perhaps in 10 years, as we get more truly progressive politicians. Now, we will have setbacks, as what's happening in the 2020 race. They are pushing the quote-unquote the Democrats, Democratic Party, are pushing quote-unquote middle-of-the-road Democrats and saying, well, the Democratic gains in the House were based upon these middle-class, middle-of-the-road, more conservative Democrats. In some instances, it's true, but even those more conservative Democrats like Abigail Spansenberger in Virginia had some progressive things, and she was an ex-CIA analyst, so she'd know in her platform, and some of the other military types in their platform. So you're seeing these things come into being there, and this is where they mention AOC here and the leader of the Labor Party, Mr. Corbyn. But Mr. Corbyn has his fall, and this is one of the things that these characters have to understand, that the progressives are not going away, period. Steve Rubowitz, he's a veteran Democratic consultant in the Clinton White House, said Republicans are having a field day because of the Muslim women in Congress. All of a sudden, they want to say the sky is falling. Well, the sky is not falling, and he will continue on. Elliot Engel, he's a Democrat, such as he's the foreign affairs chairman, who includes Omar, said prominent Democrats last month formed a new political committee, the Democratic majority, oh boy, for Israel. Well, yeah, what's new? It's always been that. Debbie Schwartzman Schultz, former chair of the Democratic Party, said the Republican attacks, not the allegations against Omar, and to believe he were politicizing the country's relationships. Well, she should know. And even old right-wing Lynn Cheney got into it, the daughter of old right-wing Cheney, the House Republican Conference, accused Democrats of enabling the growth and the rise of anti-Semitism amongst the caucus. Well, the only thing we can say there is the right-wing furious Steve Bannon, a known right-winger for his association with neo-Nazis, and Miller, who is in the White House at the present moment, a known associates with the ultra-right, with these neo-Nazi racist organizations, etc. And that is where the disguise is. But you're seeing all these people come together on a common agenda. And also Andrew Gillum dogged him by his remarks were critical of the of Israel's attack on defenseless of Palestinians. Now in Florida there's a large Jewish population there, but what happened there, Gillum lost the governor's race. That's something that has to be resolved for progressives to win on a progressive agenda, or they just simply will not be progressives winning. It is that simple, and the Democratic Party is going to have to decide of that, period. Now, let me see what else. Oh, we'll save this one. Clarence Page, I'm looking out of time here. I'm getting a little carried away. Okay. Clarence Page, GOP zingers about socialism and class war don't sting Democrats like they used to. He's correct about that, the Green Deal. Mr. Page is writing on the 8th of February. Donald Trump invoked alarm in his State of the Union over what he described as new calls to adopt socialism in our country. TV quickly cut to Bernie Sanders, the independent self-described Democratic Socialist from Vermont. reacted with a tight-lipped glance as he just bit into a full to a dill pickle. But TV might have just as well swung to AOC, that's Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez of New York. She's another self-proclaimed. Well, she is a Democratic socialist, whether she's self-proclaimed or not, who's rising camera-ready power, has picked up where Sanders failed bid, as he called it. Hey, boy, you can see the editorial room of the Chicago Tribune is busy. And said the Institute poll showed that socialism has long been viewed more favorably by a majority of Democrats. The party is slightly more to the left in recent election, while the Republican Party moved, you should say, the deep right. Steve Chapman, why are millennials drawn to socialism? Although I would question the assertion that socialism is somehow sweeping the country. Well, socialism has swept the country. Look to Eugene Debs. Right attempt to intimidate or silence the left by casting liberals as class warriors. Our socialism has lost a little bit of its sting. For AOC, as an increasing Lino could take a lot of credit, depending on your point of view, or blame the Republicans on and other conservatives, reflectively response with Venezuela, whatever progressive ideas arise, such as Medicare for all, free college tuition, a tax-rich revenue overhaul. She pops up with a more pleasant-sounding socialist model, such as Denmark. Well, Denmark's a very small country. Against that backdrop, all Capitol Hill eyes turned to the House Speaker Nancy Pelosi for her reaction to a news conference by OCS and Ed Markey on the Green New Deal. Now, that's a non-binding resolution. The idea is to get out there a Green New Deal to a top a progressive wing with sweeping ways to prioritize climate change, social justice, and mass federal investment in green infrastructure, although the progressives call the resolution a conversation starter. Support for the Green New Deal of some sort has been a rallying cry and litmus test for Democrats in 2020. Where does Pelosi stand? On Monday, the guarded optimism she showed in outmaneuvering Trump to end the partial the shutdown, we call it, she offered a measured praise for the Green New Deal without committing herself. Well, smart politician. Nancy's been around a long time. It will be one of several and maybe many suggestions that we receive, she told Politico before the new Green New Deal's sponsors had their press conference. She was being a properly cagey. Democrats have been divided since the 60s between the moderate and left progressive wings. Pelosi, in fact, that's John F. Kennedy was killed. He was in Texas to try to mend some fences there with Ralph Yarborough, a more progressive person, and some of the elements around Lyndon Johnson. Although Lyndon Johnson was an outlier. Anyway, Trump is how much, particularly on selling for Trump, is how AOC. Well, AOC is stealing the press. President Barack Obama's Affordable Care Act, better known as Obamacare, provided a powerful example, battered by the right. Its approval ratings, needlessly, as the late great Jerry Pippin said, have climbed since its passage, especially after Trump and the Republicans tried to repeal it. In the midterms, defense of AOC's coverage of pre-existing conditions of ACA was so popular that the Republican candidates promised to protect it. Well, they lied. This is part of the problem. Bernie Sanders ran for president, and I remember seeing a tweet by some reactionary that Bernie Sanders was a socialist and a Jew, but nobody